Hey, everybody, welcome back. Thank you very much for tuning in. You are listening to the Dom and Colin podcast. My name is Colin. I am back again with Dom to talk more Big Brother 7. Dom, how are you?
I'm doing great, and it's good to be back. And it's worrying me that I keep having to say that every single week that we do this now because of the, I don't know, 2 months in between every episode. But it is sincerely good to be back, and hopefully we can go through these a bit more quickly now.
Yeah, well, at least we have now mapped out a plan. And furthermore, we both just have a ton more free time now. So I think the podcasting should be way, way easier going forward. But it looks like, just to quickly get into it, I think it's fine to put out there. Today, we're going to be talking about the final eight and final seven. And then going forward, I think we're going to do one more talking about the final six and final five, another one talking from the final four through to the end, and then a final podcast giving our parting thoughts on the whole cast and the season as a whole. So we're definitely getting near the home stretch of the BB7 podcast, and it is great to be back though, Dom.
And we will not give even a tentative schedule for any of that, because when we do, it turns into this HRH challenge that George wins, where on the tiebreaker, how many minutes was it that the house went without water? And they say, oh, 300, 360, and the answer is like 6,000 and something. That's the equivalent of when we give estimates for when the podcast will be released. If you get it sometime before the midterms, let's say, then you're going to be happy about it. You'll take what you're given.
Totally. Yeah. Well, Dom, in case people have forgotten where we left off last time, we ended with the very surprising and exciting announcement that this is going to be double eviction week, not double eviction night. It's double eviction week, where we're going to lose two people in the span of the week. And I wanted to just quickly, before we get into how all of that goes down, get your take on the difference between double eviction week and double eviction night, where we play a full round in like 40 minutes.
So with that, I feel like it goes either one of two ways. Either the game gets shaken up totally because someone has this impulse to make a big move and they don't really have time to second guess themselves. And usually there are people in the house who want them to go through with it, and they're putting the full court press on them to get them to do it. So like the obvious example would be Cindy nominating and evicting Netta in BB Canada 5. Now that's the kind of thing which, if she had a full week to think about it, I don't know that she would actually summon up the courage to go through with it. But because it was like a spur of the moment thing and you can't take it back, like, you're more willing to go through with it than you would be otherwise. On the other hand, you also get this thing where there's not enough time for any real plan to come together, so you just go with whatever the obvious move is, and then that's what everyone in the house falls in behind. So it tends to go either one of two ways. You never really get an outcome which is kind of surprising, but not really.
You can go in basically, you can go in basically knowing everyone, it seems these days, knows more or less on live double eviction night when that's going to be coming, and they all have all of the plans mapped out for, okay, if this person wins HOH, and then these are going to be the targets, and if this person wins veto in that timeline, then this is going to happen. And I think a lot of people know what's going on, but I do think there was a span where the live double evictions really disadvantaged the better players and really added an element of randomness that is not usually there in the Big Brother game, where the element of people just not having enough time to think things through. And the example that I always go back to, I believe they did, it must have been the final six or final five was a live, I think it must have been final five, was one of the live double eviction rounds on Big Brother 8. And Zach won the power of veto, and Eric Stein could not convince him to use it on him and take out one of the Donatos. And Eric has maintained, and I believe him, that if he has more than like 5 minutes to make that pitch, if he gets a week to talk to Zach, or even a couple days to talk to Zach, that is a whole different end game there. And I think that makes a lot of sense. So and we even hear Will say, after Julie makes the announcement, like, this is bad for us. And in particular, when it's Chicken George who wins the live the HOH that has to make nominations right on the spot, we hear from both Will and Boogie saying, like, this is the worst possible thing that could have happened because we didn't have time to get to George before he had to make that decision. So I really do believe that if I have to have one of them, give me the double eviction week over double eviction night. But in general, I'm just not a fan of having these such fast rounds of Big Brother, although I do understand that it's just a necessity now that they're putting like 16 or 17 people into the house every season.
Yeah, and you see the other side of that coin, I guess, at the final five in this season when Chicken George ends up leaving in that. Would you call that a double eviction week or an accelerated, like, whatever that is classified as? where like you see Will for the first time getting kind of flustered when he tries to actually win a challenge for once, because he realizes, oh wait, this is actually the perfect time to take out Erica, and this is when it needs to happen, and there's no time to kind of like sit back and engineer any of it. He actually has to embrace it and go for it himself. Ends up coming so close, and that one moment potentially changes the entire outcome of the season from then on out. So that's the kind of case where, like, if you had a full week, not only does the outcome possibly change, but the entire course of events leading up to that outcome changes as well.
Okay. I do always really think it's an interesting kind of situation when these people who are so used to having so much time between every single decision and generally just bogged down by the boredom of having nothing to do in between rounds, when the decisions get made relatively early more often than not, it is really interesting to see how the game changes when they're forced to do things really fast and without much time to talk to each other. It is that, like, I do like the idea of doing that to them. I do have concerns, especially back in the kind of classic era, that it really did strongly disadvantage people and add an element of total kind of, it's not randomness, but like flukishness to Big Brother. And I mean, I guess it could be argued that that's a good thing for the game. It's just not for me.
And also, if you're going to have a week or a cycle where there is less time to make decisions, less time to influence anyone, Chicken George as a viewer is maybe the perfect HOH to have for that time span. Because like, he is someone who I think is going to listen to whoever's the last person in his ear. And when everyone knows that they have to compete to be that person, it gets very frantic very quickly. So you end up with this amazing open forum discussion where Boogie kind of doesn't know what the deal is. Like, he doesn't know that Will is actually safe. And so he has to really go in hard to try and save Will as he sees it. And it ends up leading to great TV. So I think I agree with you. I'm not sure if it's a fair twist or a good thing in general, but in this case in particular, I think it worked out perfectly.
I don't want to call it unfair, just to be clear. I don't think it's unfair. I just think it's a bad idea in a lot of cases.
But I wonder if having a double eviction week might have worked out even better than a double eviction night in this exact case, because if it is, oh, you have less than an hour to go through a whole round of Big Brother, then you don't get that scene with the open forum. You don't get a lot of that back and forth prevarication. I think you don't end up with Harry getting blindsided. I think it just comes down to something a lot more simple, whereas this seemed like just enough time to set all the wheels in motion where something like this could happen.
So let's get into this. This is a really fun week, and I know we say this at the top of every single one of these episodes, but like, there really are no slow weeks. Even at this end game, there's still always a ton to be getting into in spots that you would think would be nearly automatic. There's still a ton of really exciting kind of game dynamics to dive into.
It's a great podcasting long con to leave enough space between all of your episodes that you can just repeat your material and no one even notices.
That's right. So we are down to 8 people now, Dom. And just to reset the state of the game, we have Janelle and Howie kind of hanging on as like the remnants of that big season 6 alliance that was such a big powerhouse during the early games. We have Chilltown hooking up with Danielle and James to form the Legion of Doom, and Erica is also seeming to be tight on board with that kind of group. And then we just kind of have Chicken George floating around and just kind of drifting around in the breeze, and he is of course the one who wins this head of household out of nowhere, has to make nominations immediately, and that Legion of Doom contingent all seems to really want Janelle out. Janelle and Howie still desperately want Danielle Reyes out. It's hard to honestly say who Chilltown wants out at this point, because they still have a lot of incentive, I think, in keeping Janelle in the game. But George here, who has to make immediate nominations, is the one person who seems to really be going after James, just because of just frankly a pretty bad relationship that's been maintained over the course of the summer, dating back to when James really had to go hard at George during week 3 because he was head of household and in a pregame alliance with everyone in the house besides Chicken George. So James is going to be George's target here, and Erica is going to go up next to him as the pawn. Dom, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, this is why I love having someone like George in that HOH role, because all of someone's best laid plans, like James for weeks now has had these grand schemes going through his head where he's going to have his toes in every pool in the house. He's going to be double dipping everywhere. He's going to have this alliance with everyone. And the one person who isn't included in that because, he's just kind of worthless and who even cares? He's not going to have any influence, suddenly is one of the most pivotal players in the game. And I love it when that kind of a sudden reversal happens. I think to answer your question, it really did seem like Chilltown wanted Janelle gone here, and it's interesting in the light of the next round at Final Seven when they go through they jump through all of these elaborate hoops in order to keep Janelle around. Like they go through this they construct this farce to make it look like they're going after Janelle when in fact and it's amazing work that they do there, but it's so much effort to put in to keep Janelle around.
Right.
When here, like just one round earlier, they were perfectly happy to see her go home. So I wonder if
I'll stop cutting you off.
No, you won't. I was going to say, maybe it was Howie leaving, just having that one less number on Janelle's side that made that more palatable, I guess. But I don't know. Do you have any theories there?
So my theory is Janelle does not get drawn to play this power of veto. And before the veto competition even happens, everyone is saying, okay, unless specifically Howie wins this, George, you've got to put Janelle up. This is quite possibly the last clean look we're ever going to get at her. And I think that is probably what was prompting, because you're right. We do see over the course of this week, Mike Boogie, right after the POV draw, and they see that Janelle doesn't get to participate. He goes up to talk to George in the head of household room, and he does a great job. He frames it. He goes, listen, George, I want you to do what's best for you, but I have to warn you. What do you think the house as a general whole wants? And George immediately goes, James. And Boogie goes, no, I mean in the big picture of if someone could go up instead. It's very funny, just kind of like trying to lead George to the path of Janelle. But we'll go on to see. And this is going to be, like, frankly, I think the defining mentality of Chicken George over the, like, how I think back on Chicken George and the way the kind of the role that he played this season. Once they do get this clean look at Janelle, George is just outright unwilling to take it. George, even despite half the house, more than that, pressuring him, saying, you know, Janelle has been the best player all summer. We finally have a clean shot. We need to take it now. We may never get another chance. George is saying, I'm not willing to do that to someone who's put in so much work in the game, despite the fact that it doesn't even seem like he's not even necessarily on the same page within the game as Janelle. It just seems like George, frankly, as far as I can tell, almost viewed himself as like a spectator within the game and didn't want to disrupt like what was actually happening, unless it meant James leaving.
Some definite hot takes on that to come very shortly, but I think you're right that the fact that this is the one time when you know for sure you're going to have a clean shot of Janelle does swing things for Chilltown, because normally on a season of Big Brother, you try to put the work in before the veto, right? Because you know that anything that comes after the veto, it's almost like, well, this is the time when you would be telling me, so it doesn't mean as much. Whereas if you put that work in before, now I know that you're actually committed to that idea. When you have someone like Janelle in the game who is a favorite, is an absolute favorite against the field in almost any competition she could get drawn in, that really changes that dynamic, I think, because now you can't, it's like you can't afford to wait, because or rather you can't put yourself out there as wanting Janelle to go, because there is such a high chance that she just won't, she'll just be immune. You won't even be able to do that. So like even if the HOH is willing and able, and even if everyone in the house still hates Janelle like they did last week, there's no guarantee that you can actually take a shot at her. So to have that one chance now, and knowing that you might not get that chance until the very end of the game, I think it's a no-brainer. Even if you think there's merit to having Janelle in the house, you have to take that shot there, I think.
Right. And I believe it's true, you know, essentially, honestly, like every week other than this one, Janelle was either lock safe when she herself was HOH or one of the season six people was HOH early on, or she was, I think, always one of the initial nominees where you could you had to be worried about her being in the POV. Right. Was there ever another round where they could have taken a look at Janelle if they wanted to?
I don't think so.
I don't think there is. And then, and well, by the way, go on to see, once she gets this, I frankly feel like it's a stay of execution this round, at Chicken George being the governor, I guess, in that analogy, calling in at 11:59, saying she's good to go. Janelle does, in fact, run the table in competitions every single round from here, and she comes up one short of winning the game.
Yeah, it's a Kevin Martin-esque run, with the notable exception that Kevin actually won the final competition at the end. He didn't,
right.
didn't fall at the final hurdle.
Yeah, so it's always interesting, just Janelle in any season of Big Brother seems to really put a line in the sand that you're either with me or you're against me. And I know we talked about this before, but it does seem like a lot of the most iconic players in the years after her play very similarly, in the form of like Rachel Riley or like the Donatos, where winning competitions is what makes you a good player, and floaters need to get a life vest, and every, you know, really not only dividing the house in half, but dividing America in half as well. I think it is a really interesting kind of a look into the Big Brother fan base to see that that is the archetype that is often the most popular. Yeah. All right. So Janelle doesn't get drawn to play in this power of veto. Everyone else does. No, I guess there's still one other. Chicken George is the host, I suppose. No, he's playing because he's HOH. It doesn't matter. Janelle's not in. Nothing else matters. Howie's not going to win it because this is the competition where you have to use various items from previous challenges to put together some sort of reaching device to get a key that is a far way away from you to unlock yourself from this stump that you have been locked to. And as someone put it, I think it was Mike Boogie who said, it's a little sad for Janelle to have to stand on the sidelines and watch her only hope be Howie, who can barely tie his shoelaces together. And it's over a shot of Howie, like, struggling with some duct tape. It's very, very strong stuff. And James, incidentally, just wins this power of veto. The veto king reigns again.
Of course. And, this wouldn't be the first time that having to rely on Harry must be a very frustrating experience.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it's not. And it's probably not the last. Not a really strong week here for Howie, I'm going to say. Not a strong couple of episodes here. So James wins this power of veto. He is going to come down off of the block. And now George needs to decide who's going to go up next to Erica in his place. And everyone, as mentioned, is campaigning hard for it to be Janelle, except for Will, who goes into Chicken George's very not a good run of HOH rooms in this stretch. There are some very ugly custom HOH rooms over this stretch of episodes that we're talking about, just for the record.
I'm going to go on record as saying Janelle's pink room is the worst HOH room of all time, but if anyone has any better examples, definitely write in and let us know.
I honestly think both George's green room and Mike Boogie's kind of weird clashing color combo room might both be worse than that pink room. These are both atrocious. And I say that as someone who knows absolutely nothing about interior decorating, but these are awful.
Yeah, I'm almost curious to see what Will's room would have been more than I am curious to see what he would have done with an HOH week, because I wonder if it actually would have conformed to any standards of good decor.
I think it would have probably just looked a lot like Kacer's, like, black on black color scheme. Like, I think with Will, there's no other way you can go with it. But anyway, Will go. Sorry.
Well, no, I was going to say they had that segment with Shannon earlier in the season about how Will, despite being a 33-year-old accomplished doctor, is basically an overgrown child. So I'm imagining it would just look like his, you know, student dorm room from 15 years ago.
Right, yeah, you'd have a bunch of Dave Matthews Band posters on the wall. So Will goes into this abhorrent green Chicken George HOH room with a proposal of his own, which is, George, how about you put me up? I will go next to Erica. And in Will's mind, he's thinking, I'll go next to Erica. She will leave. And this gives Janelle a free pass through to the next round, where she and Danielle Reyes can keep going to war with each other. And assuming Will has the votes to stay against Erica, which it seems like both Will and Erica believe to be the case when she hears about this plan, she is not excited about the idea of going next to Will. I think this actually makes a lot of sense for Will to be on the block and let I don't think this is the craziest thing in the world. If he has the votes. Obviously, it's a dangerous game to play.
Yeah, if it works, it looks like genius. If it doesn't work, you look like Jordan Paha, which I love Jordan, obviously, but you're taking a certain risk, which you understand, you know, when you sign up for it.
But I mean, that's what Chilltown, that's their whole MO, these kind of middle end game round seems to be, we need to take risks to keep Janelle in the game at this point. Like, once it's clear that Chicken George is not interested in putting her up, we need to weaponize her. And I think they do a really good job adjusting once they think that that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I do wonder, though, if... So Will, during the course of the season, he has been nominated exactly once. He received zero votes. He stayed 9-0. And I wonder if by this point he's acquired this aura of invincibility almost, and just going on the block again, even if he stays unanimously once again, would tarnish that or take away from that to some degree and make the idea of nominating him seem more plausible in the future.
Oh, okay. I mean, for me, I just buy that Will truly does not care at all about being nominated if he's comfortable, or if he's not comfortable, that he has the votes to stay. I really don't think he would have minded. He even goes, he says, as he's walking out of the room, he says in a diary room confessional, like, look, either I'm going out by my own hand or this is going to work and it's going to be a huge moment in the game, and either one of those is fine with me. Like, I really do buy that Will is in there totally willing to make the high risk, high reward plays. And I think this could definitely be one of them. Although I'm now wondering, why aren't they not only once George clearly won't put Janelle up, but maybe even initially, why aren't they trying to say, let's get Howie up there instead of Janelle? Like, why does it have to be a default? Why aren't they arguing actively to get Howie up there?
Yeah, Harry seemed like the last minute compromise process of elimination
right.
vote, I guess. But yeah, I wonder if, so maybe initially the idea of nominating anyone except Janelle seems so suspicious to, let's say, Danielle and James, that to even float the idea would make them question exactly what their motives were. But when you see that George is being so, like, weirdly resistant to putting her up, I think that's the natural next step. It's, okay, if you're not willing to put Janelle up, can we at least weaken her position in the game by taking out Harry? And it's...
Right.
I
think you nailed it, though, in thinking, if we have this clean look at Janelle, to put it in secret Hitler terms, James and Danielle are going to be saying, anyone who doesn't obviously want Janelle to get backdoored is a fascist. Like, you're up to something if you don't want that for sure to be the case.
Yeah, really dating this episode of the BBC7 coverage, when the last time we did this, we had no idea what secret Hitler was. And now we've played definitely hundreds of hours combined, I would wager, between the two of us.
It's getting there. It's certainly getting there. But I think that could be it, that any, you know, expressing any motive other than, of course, we need to backdoor Janelle, just is totally inconsistent with what you need the rest of the house to believe at that point. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, so let's...
Just to go back to what you said earlier, I think it actually does make a lot of sense then, if for Will to nominate himself or campaign to get nominated, knowing that he then gets to still split the difference between Janelle and Harry on one side and Danielle and James on the other. And he can come out of that somehow, once again, smelling like roses when both sides still completely believe that he's on board with them. So the challenge that everyone is facing at this point is how to get inside Chicken George's head and figure out what's actually going on inside there, if anything. and this is going to be a constant challenge whenever he attains any kind of power. And for Boogie, you can tell that he feels this... sense of desperation when it looks like Will actually is going to be under threat for the first time for reasons that he himself was not privy to and that he doesn't know about, and he's only finding out now at the last moment when he's has to work on Chicken George under this time pressure. So what do you think his approach to I won't say winning George over, because it's more like just bullying him or manipulating him or something to that effect, but how do you think he sees the task in front of him here?
Well, I wonder if Boogie was deliberately waiting for this exact moment, because I'm sure they know the process for how everything goes down before a veto meeting happens. And this is something that we normally don't see on TV, is them in lockdown, just as production sets up whatever it is that they need to set up. I think first and foremost that Boogie was probably waiting. I think he knew that this would be the spot. And he even said that I wanted to be one of the last people in Chicken George's ear. And again, to go back to it, I think that's a lot easier to do when you know you have the coup d'etat, and probably the whole house knows you have at least some sort of secret power. But I think that was the most deliberate part of it for Boogie was, I think he was less concerned about how able he would be to speak in this kind of public setting. I think he has a lot of confidence in himself in that capacity. I think for him, it came down to when the best time to make this kind of move would be. And I don't think he had a ton of options, just because I don't think he found out about it until relatively late. And this was an accelerated week. But I think the most deliberate part of all of this by Boogie was waiting for the last minute.
Yeah, Boogie, I don't think, is lacking confidence in any setting, really. But why do you say that? Why do you think he was trying to ambush George effectively in this public forum?
Well, this isn't the first time that we've seen this from Chilltown. Will always made a big point whenever Janelle was head of household to be the last person in her ear. And I don't know what that says about the way the game has changed, because I feel like actually – these days, that I don't know how good of a game plan that would even be on modern Big Brother. It really feels like far more often than not, we're going into every HOH competition. We find, you know, the Twitter is rooting for whoever the big disaster head of household would be. But whenever it's someone outside of that fringe one or two or maybe three people, it really feels like these days the plan is just set 20 minutes after that competition is over, and all that really matters is the veto at that point. So I do think it's interesting, and I'm surprised, honestly, based on the way the game has evolved, that this was such an effective technique back in the day. But I think it comes down to they just think they're very easily influenced, and I think I've heard it called like the parakeet effect, where like certain people are just so willing to buy into something they just heard about 30 seconds ago if it seems like a great idea. And to reference Secret Hitler, that's something we see all the time in that game.
Yeah, not throwing shade at anyone in particular there, certainly.
But... no, and myself, I might be the most guilty of it.
Yeah, so it's interesting to note that no one else even tries to get a word in edgeways. It's not a debate, it's not any kind of discussion, it's just Boogie working on George in front of everyone. You don't see Erica or Danielle chiming in, right? I mean, Boogie refers to Janelle at some point and asks her a question, basically forces her to put her 2 cents in, but she doesn't actively contribute to that discussion. So it's really just Boogie doing his thing. And even Will is not saying anything except when the flow of the conversation naturally leads that way. So this really just is a one-man show. And I wonder if that moment changed the perception of Boogie in the house going forward.
Well, I think it may have, but I also think it may have also that kind of conversation where, as everyone else was going around in a circle just giving their quick thoughts, I think it may have also influenced how George felt about Howie, or at least what we saw on TV was when George says, "Howie, what do you think about all this?" Howie says, you know, he can't offer literally anything. He just pauses for a second and says, "You know, I think everyone's already said everything that there is to be said." And when George is going through in the back of his mind a very short list of replacement nominees, and it seems like a big piece of his criteria, at least as far as, you know, I've been positing over this episode and as far as I can tell, seems to be not wanting to get in the way of any of like the actual big time players of the game. I think Howie giving such a bad response there may have sealed his own fate much more, maybe even, I'm not going to say as much as Mike Boogie did or as much as, you know, the knowledge of the coup d'etat did, but I certainly think it didn't help. Just Howie having literally nothing to offer there.
It seems like this is what George probably would have done anyway. And it's only Will just being Will and just spouting nonsense constantly that led to him even being in the mix in the first place, and Boogie having to, as he sees it, rescue Will from that situation.
Right. I'm wondering what you think about Chicken George just and his whole motivation as HOH, because as I've said several times, as recently as 1 minute ago, I really feel like George viewed himself as kind of an observer in the Big Brother 7 house. Are you on board with that, or am I just kind of assigning that motivation to him?
Okay, it's time to sign the klaxon. We have another conspiracy theory coming in here. So what I've heard as an explanation for why George, even after everyone else in the house was telling him, putting so much pressure to nominate Janelle, the reason he refused to go through with it was, back in season one, his family received a lot of hate mail and just like negative feedback and a lot of social pressure based on what he was doing in the house. And obviously the format of the game back then was the public was a lot more involved. And so they necessarily, there was going to be a lot of that kind of back and forth. But that, he really took that to heart. And I think that was something which left these scars coming out of season one. And so when he comes into All Stars, he is somewhat conscious of wanting to get on the audience's good side as well as the house's. And the theory that I've heard is that the producers during this week when, you know, they don't want Janelle to go. They were reminding him just how popular Janelle was on the outside, just how heated those debates between the friendship fans and, well, friendship fans, the friendship fan and the Sovereign Six fans were in BB6, and just and gently nudging him at the very least to this realization that if you put up Janelle, there's going to be an equally vicious torrent of hate towards you and your family coming out of this. So I think,
okay,
I don't know if that's true or if that's verified by anything, but that would make a lot of sense to me.
It certainly does make sense. Yeah, I'm not going to say it doesn't make sense, although I do think back to when he was up on the block week 3, Chicken George was just resigned to his fate because he's like, I'm up against the doctor, I have no chance. I really do think he has a ton of reverence for the big players of the game. Like, I do think there was certainly an element of authenticity at the very least to that aspect of it. But I could certainly see what you're saying, because plenty of it is framed in terms of like, these are two big these being Will and Janelle are just too big of players within the franchise for me to be comfortable doing that. And I could see that being from the angle of like, they're too popular, like they're too vital to the success of this TV show for me to do that to them. So Howie, I guess let's send it over, Dom. It's worth playing the audio, the full audio here of Chicken George getting up to replace this, make this replacement nomination, and just the fireworks that ensue from there.
Boogie, I'm glad you talked. Boogie did save me. Doctor saved me. Janelle, I won't go after you because you played the game very well. And Danny, I won't go after you. There's only one person left, Howie.
If you promised me, huh, Georgie? Twice?
I didn't promise you. I said, I didn't promise you.
You promised me twice, Georgie. And you want to listen to the people that tried to sell your ass out last week? Well, they're impossibly outnumbered.
I have no choice, Howie.
It's a free week for me, Georgie. It's a free week.
I had to go with what Boogie told me because Boogie made sense. And I won't go against Janie. I can't go against the doctor because the doctor did save me.
I saved you last week, Georgie. I was probably one of the most motivational reasons for it, but your allies decided to sell you under the bus last week. You were expendable to them. Throwing you under the bus, if he doesn't count, he'll never win an HOH. We'll keep our three intact.
Now, Howie, I don't want to do this, but you're the only one.
That's fine, Georgie. You get influenced by people. Oh, he's never been nominated, never had a rocket shot at him. You know, we have to take away someone's crutch, someone's helper, someone's partner. Fine. Because the joke's on them this week, Georgie. The joke is on them.
Okay. Does anybody else have anything to say?
This meeting
is adjourned.
And you can tell that as Chicken George is going through this process of elimination and it counts down and Harry is still in the mix every single time, you can see his two brain cells like slowly start to work in tandem together and realize that, wait, hold on a second. And so by the time it gets to him, he's just about realized what's going on. And so you see this great like organic reaction from Harry, which, I mean, Harry is always over the top. He's always boisterous. He's an overgrown child, effectively. But you... it's like it dawns on him that this defense he mounts in his own behalf, which is actually pretty good for the position that he's in, maybe should have come a bit before that point.
Yeah. Worth noting, just for the historical record, Howie was the last person in the house to this point who had not been nominated. And he had a funny just kind of throwaway line that made the final episode that I thought was funny, about just thinking that like that was the reason people were targeting him. He was like, oh, you know, people are talking about Hurricane Howie, like I'm just because I haven't been nominated yet. I thought it was funny. Just Howie on his way out, thinking he was leaving for much different reasons. First of all, thinking he was staying, but then on his way out the door, I mean, thinking he left for much different reasons than he did.
Yeah, Howie is one of those players that we've spoken about for Survivor this season, how someone like Ashley or Ryan, it's hard to predict exactly when and how they could go home. Not when will they, but how could they? Like, it doesn't seem to make sense. And so you know that when that does happen, it's going to be because either someone messed up somewhere or there was this weird confluence of events that somehow led to them leaving. And I feel like Harry is in exactly that same spot here, where it's like Janelle has to be immune And also, someone has to be willing to take a shot at Harry and have that not rebound on someone else for Harry to even be in the mix. And it's like, I think if Harry survived this week, like, it would be very hard for him to, I guess maybe in the double eviction or something, but Harry could easily just, like, slide along until, like, the final five, final four, final three. And he seemed like the ideal goat, honestly. Like, okay, he's got Janelle's vote in the bag, but everyone else, I think, probably just beats him 6-1, right?
Well, I guess so. But I let's think back to one, whichever of our earlier podcasts this came up. I don't think it's crazy that Howie might have been the BB Sixer with the most win equity out of this group. Maybe James. James probably had higher win equity than Howie. But I don't think it's crazy to think that Howie had a better shot at winning an all-star season when everyone is a known commodity than Janelle or Kacer ever did. Even though I obviously say that knowing Janelle came very close to winning this season. But I feel like, and frankly, I feel like for future all-star seasons after this only serve to generally confirm this for me, that the Howie types are the ones that you need to be the most concerned about, the people who it would take really freak circumstances for them to ever realistically leave, prior to like Final Four. So I guess, all right, let's get into Howie on his way out, because Howie actually at that veto ceremony, that would not be Howie's biggest meltdown of the week, because Chilltown lays it on very thick all for the rest of however long this short week was, telling Howie, you know, bros before hoes, you're totally good. Boogie going so far as to ask him if he's even going to bother packing for the eviction ceremony. Now, there is still the issue of James, who is, for whatever reason, still trying to maintain his cover with BB6 here. And obviously Janelle is going to vote to keep Howie as well. So it is going to take the Will vote and Danielle vote and Erica vote all to go on Howie for him to leave. But Dom, I guess let's get into Howie on his way out the door here, because this is fantastic stuff as well.
Sorry, Howie.
Thanks for the sellout, buddy.
Tight. Class move. Yeah, another class act move. Leaves the Big Brother house.
Yeah. Right to my face, lie to me.
You little punk. Howie, get to stepping. Get to stepping,
yeah,
Howie.
What are you going
to
do about it?
There's 20 people standing outside the door. Get to stepping. Another class act leaves the house.
My ass.
Class act.
Class act. You got the Chilltown's word is good as gold.
Go get a life, Howie. Go get a life, dog.
All right, so and before we move on to parting thoughts on Howie, one very quick tangent that I've done many times on over various Big Brother podcasts. I'll do it again quickly here, because for whatever reason, this kind of goofy music always brings me back that they would play underneath people walking out of the Big Brother house back before they had the live audience. It would just be a quiet walk over to Julie, and how every single time I watch BB7 after Howie has that giant blow up with Mike Boogie and he's about to punch him in the face or whatever, he just walks off to this goofy kind of music, and I very much miss no live audience. I hate the live audience so much. I just had to say, every single time it crosses my mind, I need to put it in my notes and I need to remind the people how much better life was before the live audience. I like, obviously this is not a new complaint, but I hate how much emphasis is being placed on the fans of the show. And I get that that's kind of the point. Like, the whole premise is, oh, we get to be voyeurs here. And at a certain point, I suppose the show, you know, as all of television is just dwindling drastically year after year, just bleeding viewers, of course they're going to want to be more engaged with the fans and have a more active kind of presence in that capacity. But and also it goes along, I'm sure, hand in hand with like the rise of social media and Twitter live tweeting and so forth. But I really just don't like that emphasis. I think the emphasis should be placed on the game. And I think the fans can only serve to hinder that. And the big concern I had back when I was initially terrified of the fans coming back for, I think, Big Brother 10, was that the house guests would be able to hear things and hear fan reactions. And we have seen over the years, time after time after time, they can. They get plenty from hearing the fans reacting to things. Are you defend the live audience, Dom.
No,
come on, do it.
No. So it was BB10, right, when it was reinstated?
I believe so.
Yeah, but my memory, and this might just be nostalgia, is that at first for BB10, BB11, it didn't have the same vibe that it does nowadays. It was much more low-key. So you would come out, and there would be this polite clapping and so on. But it didn't really affect the way that things proceeded. Whereas now, anyone who leaves, unless they really fuck up on like an Aaron Grease level, just walks out to this rapturous applause. And I wonder, do you think that has an effect on their mindset going into the jury house and then how that affects their eventual decisions. Because, like, they get no immediate feedback from the audience. Everyone who leaves the house leaves thinking that the audience loves them, that they did nothing wrong, that they're able to reassure themselves of that. So there's really no ability for self-doubt. Whereas if it's just you going out there, sitting for a short interview with Julie, and then you get carted off, that's a very solitary experience. And if you had any need for closure coming out of the house, that's still there. That's not getting resolved anytime soon.
How is a bunch of cheering fans that are obviously going to cheer for you help anything with that? I don't feel like that's a difference maker
because,
at all.
Firstly, I don't think a lot of the people who go on Big Brother nowadays are self-aware enough to think, these people are clapping because there's someone holding a sign saying please clap in Jeb Bush style, as opposed to they're clapping for me because they love me, because who doesn't? And also, like, when you're in that heated leaving moment, for lack of a better phrase, like, your emotions are running high. Maybe you've just been betrayed, maybe you didn't know what the result was going to be on eviction night, and now in that moment you're coming out to this great reception from the audience, and that has to dampen down some of those negative feelings, surely.
Okay, well, the reason that I care about it has nothing to do with the impact that it has on the person who's leaving or anything like that. What I don't like, and I felt way back then, and it continues to bother me every time it comes in, is the live audience reacts to things that like they are these days reacting to, like, people casting votes, and people, as they're casting votes, can hear the audience going crazy with applause as they're voting out Netta in BB Can 5, or what was it, 5?
Yeah.
I skipped one of them, so I've lost count somewhere along the way. It was the fifth one overall, my fourth season. Like, there are we've heard plenty of different instances where people could confirm that they could hear the audience reacting to either competition wins or people casting votes in the diary room, which to me is just absolutely batshit insane with the entire premise of Big Brother. It's that you're completely cut off from the outside world.
I absolutely co-sign that. But for the question that I asked, do you think it has this longer term impact?
No, I don't think it has any impact other than to... No, I don't know.
Okay,
I think it's
Let's
only
on.
There. I think it's well. Do you believe that? And if so, would you elaborate?
Well, it's the kind of thing which is completely unfalsifiable. There's no way to know this at all. And if it operates at all, it can only be on the subconscious level. But I think it's an interesting discussion to have, because it's like,
okay,
when you change the nature of evictions in this fundamental way, surely that's going to be important somehow, right?
So when it comes to Big Brother preparing people for the outside world after however long they were in the house, you're good with just give them a live audience and they'll be all set.
Basically. Or just tell them, none of this is real. This is just a Truman Show on a smaller scale. None of these people actually know or like you. They're just clapping because we told you to. And this experience will destroy you mentally, psychologically, physically. And tough shit. You can deal with that however you want.
Okay. All right. Well, no live audience, unfortunately, for Howie as he was on the way out. Dom, any other parting thoughts on Howie?
I think we've given a lot of hot takes on Hurricane Harry throughout his, what is it, 7 weeks on the show? Which, when you're watching it, when you're binging it, it's so compressed that it feels that your sense of time is heavily warped. And when you have that much Harry in such a short time span, it's easy to not have an accurate sense of how present he truly was. But yeah, Harry is I laugh at him, but not with him. And sometimes he crosses a line into just being outright uncomfortable. So I don't know. As I said before, Harry is maybe the one character in all of Big Brother who has aged the worst for me.
Okay, yeah, I remember we did talk, I think in like our season preview podcast, it may have even been, about how Howie really is kind of a sign of the times of like the mid-2000s that would not probably play nearly as well in the modern era. Although honestly, in watching back just old seasons of both Survivor and Big Brother, there are a lot of things in there that I think would have been real issues for a lot of these people if social media had been a thing, and if people had just been as generally woke as we got, I suppose, by the year 2017, if you want to call this a year of wokeness to any extent. But certainly better than 2003 or 2006, I guess, in this case, in a lot of regards. So there goes Howie, who incidentally, it's good to hear. I enjoyed hearing. I think I heard this when April from BB6 did RHAP this last Big Brother season, how he apparently doing a really good job as a meteorologist. I remember that's what he was like studying when he was doing Big Brother. I think that's cool that Howie is a meteorologist. As someone who has, you know, I worked a long time at a TV station. That's no joke to be a meteorologist.
Yeah, but because it's no joke, is it actually cool that Howie is doing that as opposed to literally anybody else?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm happy. I feel like Howie could be a great meteorologist. I feel like that is a good medium for Howie to not say anything that's going to get him in trouble.
I just feel like if he was my local weatherman, I would be scoping out other sources to get some of my information there.
Okay, so there goes Howie. And incidentally, this feud between Howie and Boogie not over. There was at the following eviction that we're going to get into next, where James ends up getting evicted. Julie asked Mike Boogie about that whole dispute with Howie the previous week, and Boogie gives him a final parting shot of, "If I sold lightsabers for a living, I'd have a lot of anger too," which really landed with the rest of the house. And I guess that's another reason I'm glad that Howie has moved on to a much more lucrative career than selling lightsabers.
And this is in a week where, notionally, they're still trying to keep Janelle on their side and keep themselves in her good graces after just blindsiding one of her closest friends. And they made no attempt to even disguise their disdain for him at any point during the show. Everyone else are at least going through the motions of playing that kind of social game. With Harry, they just don't even bother. Like, everyone knows what the deal is.
Well, that's the thing is, the line that they're going to take this following week with Janelle is going to be, "We got rid of Howie so that the strongest player in the game would be by herself. And if, you know, hopefully she can think things through clearly, and she will see that she would want to come with Chilltown rather than being with Danielle and Erica and James. Like, Chilltown is the only thing she's got going for her if Howie's out of the game." So it doesn't really, like, when they're trying to pitch that to her, like, "Oh, we got rid of Howie for you," they don't even need to pretend to have ever liked Howie. It could still make sense for them to be dicks to him on the way out.
Yeah. As a closing question about the gameplay this week, who do you think had a good week or a good cycle in terms of the way this went down and the final outcome? Because we had this debate for Chilltown before when, Will, I'm going to say, did not have a good week. And that's obviously his own doing, and he always gets out of it. So did he really have a bad week? But these are the kinds of debates you have to have with him. Who else do you think either excelled themselves or maybe slipped up this time?
Okay, so this may be controversial, and I'm sure there are plenty of things that Mike Boogie did that people did not particularly care for over the course of this week, especially in a position where I'm thinking plenty of people were frankly like jealous that knowing that he had this secret power and feeling like everything he said was probably from the perspective of like, at least I know I'm gonna be okay, which is an uphill battle in and of itself. But I really do think Boogie did a good job with what, you know, setting out this agenda and really executing on it well and making himself known to be like a really good player. I guess what I'm getting at is I don't think Boogie necessarily did himself many favors within the house. But for me, when I'm watching this season back, this to me is one of the strongest weeks by anyone, I would say, like one of the strongest, maybe not weeks, but one of the strongest scenes by anyone is Boogie really locking the whole group down and changing Chicken George's mind over the course of 20 minutes. And it's not too far off from in BB14, that infamous coaches meeting where I feel like he did the exact same thing to Janelle, Brittany and Dan. I feel like this week, while it may not have been the best for him in the house, I think this does a lot to make the case for why Boogie is truly a great Big Brother player.
Yeah, I know that when he was evicted in BB14, going out pre-jury, and I know there were a lot of hurt feelings about that. He was very thankful to have your support. You know, the knowledge that he had risen in your estimation was the one saving grace there.
He wrote me a personal letter. He wrote me a letter from, actually, interestingly, from Sunbay to Hubei. It doesn't normally go that way, but in this case, he made the exception. So, Dom, our next head of household competition is going to be a true or false contest, and this is going to come down to Mike Boogie and Janelle. Boogie, who still has this coup d'etat valid for yet another round, ends up winning this competition, and he ends up celebrating as follows.
Congratulations, Mike. You're the new head of household. George, please hand over the HOH bedroom key to Mike.
So Super Bowl indeed. And Dom, let's start with, why the hell would Boogie win this competition? The first time I brought this up was a couple of podcasts ago, and you said, oh, you know, when we get there, you'll have a defensive Boogie for wanting to win this competition. So let's hear what that is.
Did I?
Yes, you did. Okay, and now you need to come up with one on the fly. You said,
all right, let's do it. Okay, so I think you want to at least have the option on the table of taking out Janelle. I think you really want to be able to play the week by ear, and depending on the results of the competitions, you can then decide which of these two directions you want to go. I think committing yourself to having to side with Janelle again as she goes after Danielle and James, it's like, you've seen with Janelle, like, even when she is by herself, when she's isolated, when she is the only person on her side of the house, she is still, just by sole virtue of her competition prowess, one of the biggest threats in the game. And it's very realistic that coming into the final seven now, coming into the final seven, like, if she wins here, I guess she can't win 8-8 at final six, so she's vulnerable then, but she can still just win the veto very easily. Like, it's going to be hard to actually nail her down to a point where you get a chance to take her out. And if this is a week where you get to take that shot, you might just have to do it. So I think even if you think there are no other good arguments, you think the Boogie's unnecessarily exposing himself or having to walk this very fine line, just being able to take out Janelle if you want to is very beneficial, I think.
Okay, and I also do think there's a lot of a compelling reason if James and Janelle, as we'll see, both go on to be cool with being nominated and understand why they have to be the nominees. Like, Chilltown is secretly working in air quotes with both of them. And when you probably spent a decent percentage of the previous week talking about, okay, if we win this next HOH, who are we putting up? I feel like they could have had a good idea that winning HOH and probably being the people that can eventually be taking credit for, like, doing the house's dirty work and getting out either of Janelle or James is probably going to be a pretty beneficial idea. Like, I actually think if there is a week that you can get away with making, honestly, like, no bad move here. If Janelle wins POV, you can get rid of James. If James wins POV, we can obviously get rid of Janelle.
Yeah, it's if you go back a few weeks to the Marcellus eviction, that on paper is very good for Chilltown, right? Because you take out someone in the game who is never going to be loyal to you, can't be won over by any kind of game-based argument, any rational argument. He just has this hatred for you that he's going to pursue if he gets the opportunity. So removing that kind of variable from the game is great for them. However, you ensure that a few weeks down the line, you're going to have to make this kind of choice where you have Janelle on one side, potentially with Harry, which would maybe complicate the issue even more, and then Danielle and James on the other. And either way, you're going to come out of that week probably no longer able to have them all convinced that you're on each of their sides. So you're going to have to take a stand there. And
Hang on. But one of them's going to be leaving, and then the other one will think you're on their side.
Well, not necessarily, because we saw Danielle going to the final six figure out that Chilltown had been playing them the whole time, and that they were the ones who had broken up the Legion of Doom.
Okay, I'm sorry, I misunderstood the in question. My apologies.
Right, I guess it's better if, let's say, Harry is still there, you vote out Janelle, and then Harry's on the rampage, as scary as that is. But who even cares, right? Because he's not going to be able to do anything. So in that case, I think you want to take out Janelle. Maybe without Harry there, that swings it back in favor of breaking up Danielle and James. Although it's interesting because the threat that they pose is next week when it's six people. Boogie can't play anymore if he wins this week, so it's down to Will, who, yeah, that's just nothing. Yeah, you can disregard
good luck
that.
With that shit.
Yeah. And then you have potentially Danielle, James, and Erica as this three-person group, and the only other option for them is Chicken George. And if they do that, then okay, congratulations, you've won the game, you've snowed everyone, perfect. But if they have an ounce of common sense, they're going to realize that this might actually be the perfect time to take a shot at Chilltown.
It turns out you may not be able to talk themselves into self-evicting.
Right. So. Yeah, so voting out Janelle here seems kind of risky, and if that's the case, then maybe it is actually correct to just throw it, because then you know that going into the final six, everyone will be fully on board with just going after Janelle. But then you go to the next level of that, which is they were able to talk Erica into turning on Danielle, so maybe that actually wasn't a big threat to begin with, so they didn't need to vet out James. But it's weird, right? Like, either way, you're going to be in this tough position this week, and maybe just having that extra agency over it is reassuring.
Right, and that is a good point, that like it's hard to say when we will go on to see them at the round of six get Erica to put up Danielle over either one of them, her best friend the entire game. It is hard to take issue with whatever the boot order is if they can seem to, you know, just mind control people into doing whatever they want. I guess competitions are a much bigger issue in that timeline. But as we'll see, this veto competition is really going to come down to, you know, by the time the veto rolls around, Chilltown are actively working to try to get Janelle that veto. And, you know, Will says something, you know, basically along the same lines as something you just said, where he said,
"It is absolutely imperative that Janelle remains in this house. Why? She's a much bigger target than Chilltown. Her as an individual is still a bigger target than Mike Boogie and I as a pair. It's unbelievable. We have to keep her here, even if she's not on our side, just so that the others will chase her down."
And I think that is such tremendous foresight, like historically tremendous foresight by Will Kirby. This is the blueprint of the now extraordinarily popular, and because it's a great strategy, Meat Shield strategy that has taken Survivor and Big Brother by storm. Will and Boogie, I guess, as well, but Will, even Boogie credits Will with coming up with the plan here, is laying this out, and it makes so much sense. And it's incredible to me that it took almost a decade for this to become like a regular thing on these other kind of shows. So I think that is some really good stuff. And I also, another Will quote that I think we should get into for how the rest of this week is going to play out and why they ended up on the same side as Janelle here, is Will, who has been working, of course, with Boogie and Danielle and James in the Legion of Doom. Now that we're down to seven people, says from the outside, quote, "The Legion of Doom is invulnerable. No one can break in, but there's a little bit of a crack in the armor that's starting from the inside out. And that crack is me. I don't trust James because James is currently in an alliance with every single person in the house." And that will be the theme of this week, is that Chilltown really tries their best to help Janelle get this veto so that James can finally take the fall.
I think part of Will's brilliance as a TV character is he has these great one-liners, these great sound bites that are very memorable that we're going to play time and time again on the show, but then also just these generic strategy confessionals of what he's doing, what his goal for the week is, and how he's going to do it. He manages to add a kind of verve to them that is just lacking from, especially nowadays when everything is just so like soulless and repetitive, that it really makes you pine for the good old days. And I guess specifically for Will, who is maybe the all-time best at just giving that kind of articulation in the diary room.
Yeah, and he is. And you know who the all-time number two is?
Boogie.
Mike Boogie. The two greatest confessionalists in the history of Big Brother are Will and Mike Boogie. I've said that before. I will not be accepting ats at this hour on that take, but that is where I stand firmly on the issue. Who's the number three? Is it Brittany Haynes? Who are we? Who else is in the consideration for number three?
Yeah, Brittany is certainly out there. I don't even know who the debate is between. Like, who are the other contenders?
Yeah, Chilltown are so clearly one and two for me. All right, whatever. We suck off Chilltown enough over the course of these podcasts. We don't need to find new ways to do it.
You don't think that Dan's supersonic yelling is in the mix at all?
Well, as everyone can tell, Dan is clearly my podcasting inspiration. But in the diary room, I think maybe it's a different environment, Dan. I'm sure I would be the exact same way. I would be Adam Klein. I would just be screaming for absolutely no reason. Like, I don't know what a microphone does. Okay. So Dom, let's get into, I guess before we dive any further into this week, let's check in with This Week in Old CBS Shows. That's right. Everyone's favorite segment is back. Dom, quickly, this week's show, Rockstar Supernova, which was the second season of a Mark Burnett created reality competition show. It was kind of like American Idol, except it was to find lead vocalists for heavy metal bands. The first season was to get INXS a new lead vocalist, and this second season was for a group that was going to be called Supernova until some controversy arose. And via Wikipedia, as the show's name implies, the new group was to be called Supernova. However, another band named Supernova was granted an injunction against the TV supergroup, stating that they cannot use the name Supernova for any promotion or perform under that name. With this judicial ruling, the band announced that their official name would be, wait for it, Rockstar Supernova, the name of the show, which, so now it would be Rockstar, Rockstar Supernova would be the amended version of the show name. They now perform under the name Rockstar Supernova, which I loved. So there's your this week in old CBS TV shows that get promoted on the lower third of Big Brother 7.
My life is much better for having known that now.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. All right, Dom. So let's get into the power of veto. It is a big historical moment, I'm going to say.
Actually, let's get into the initial nomination strategy here because...
Oh, okay. Let's not get into the big historical moment that I've now teased. Actually, let's see if people can figure out what it is as they wait for us to get there. See if you can come up with what is historical about this veto competition.
Okay. Well, I certainly can't, and I have the show notes open, so I wait with bated breath for this, but... It seems like this plan to put up the two remaining season six members who just happen to be on opposite sides of the same like Chill Town alliance without even knowing it. Boogie, it seems like he realized that immediately. The moment he won HOH, this was a plan, and Will was on board with it, even though he wasn't on board with Boogie being in the HOH seat in the first place.
In defense, and this is kind of why I skipped over it. As far as I'm concerned, this is a no-brainer, especially when they're all going to be cool with it. Putting up exactly James and Janelle, your story checks out with every single person in the house, including James and Janelle.
Yeah, well, I bring it up because it seems at the same time both very obvious and also quite an advanced play that he instantly realized he had to perform. So, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be as impressed by that as I was, but I see what you're saying about it just being the natural move.
It's just who you would do... Everything possible in this scenario, I would imagine, to try to maintain as good of a relationship as you can with Danielle and Erica. Chicken George, I guess you could put him up if you needed to fill a seat. Like, I suspect Chicken George may have been a consideration for certain different timelines when they were thinking things through. But I really feel like as soon as you even come across the idea of James and Janelle, that, you know, it makes so much sense for everyone. You can spin it as, oh, I got to finish off season six. You guys have been the biggest presence in the house the whole time and maintain your cover with every other thing you have going on in the house. It seems like what more could you possibly ask for? And maybe another good argument for why you might want to actively win this HOH rather than lose it. Although I do think keeping Janelle immune by throwing it to her might be the better idea, as well, just because we'll go on to see in this veto, it is a huge swing whether or not Janelle can win this veto herself for the rest of the game plays out.
Yeah, and I also think that if your plan initially is to go after James, then when you do that, you understand that at some point you will have to swing back, go after Janelle, and having both Janelle be able to play in that final six HOH and Boogie not be able to play is such a massive swing in terms of your odds of being able to get her out that week if you want to. So
that's fair. That's definitely fair. But you're going to be out if she's not there. Is the highly likely circumstance if it's James, Danielle, and Erica finally get a chance to turn on you. I don't think you can imagine at the round of eight that you're going to be able to just mind fuck Erica the way that you can at that point.
Oh no, certainly. But I think at final seven, if you want to take out, let's say, James, and then final six, you're assuming Danielle and Erica. Maybe a repair, maybe you can turn them against each other, but that seems like the perfect chance, if you get it at all, to go after Janelle, when she no longer has any friends, and also when you can buy some goodwill with Erica if you want her to turn on Danielle later by doing this now.
And in that scenario, I think the dream there, this is probably, I think in Danielle's mind, the way she was hoping the Legion of Doom would play out is they would get down to like the final five or final six, and then she and James and Erica would become that power trio. And I think when Erica won that final six HOH, she was probably really, really excited that the end game was finally going to break Danielle Reyes's way.
And I think it's very crucial this week that Erica was so on board instantly with turning on James, because as much as we talk about Danielle rallying her troops and getting Erica and James on board, it felt like she would be the center of that wheel and they would be the two spokes. But Erica and James by themselves would never really team up at all.
Right.
So Danielle was really the center there, which makes me wonder, actually, does it make more sense to go after Danielle here? Like, knowing that James and Erica don't have that tight bond, that you won't have to put all of this good work in next week to make that work?
I would say I would be going after James, first and foremost, because of what I was talking about, that nomination set just does so much work for you in making everyone feel like you're still on their side while accomplishing the goals that you want to accomplish. And furthermore,
I'm taking it for 100% granted here that either Janelle or James is going to win that veto. Like, how is that not going to happen? Right,
of course. I would as well. But that's my point, is I would much rather, if one of James or Danielle is going to be leaving at Final 7, please let me keep Danielle Reyes around instead of the guy who wins 3 out of 4 vetoes he plays in.
Yeah, that's true. Although it does make me think that, so what if you let Janelle win it, you throw it to her, she puts up Danielle and James, you run the same gambit that you ran with Danielle a few weeks ago, where you throw the veto to James, let's say, but then it's tougher because you would need the two of them to remain on the block together, and then you have to vote out one of them. Whereas if, let's say, Erica or George goes up and you vote out Danielle, well, now James is going to have questions about you. So, yeah, right. I see.
Well, we also see, as Chilltown, after we'll go through the veto quickly. But after Chilltown, Janelle wins the veto, and they're deciding to turn, that they're obviously going to turn on James at that point. They are very clear in saying, this decision is coming down to how we think Danielle Reyes will handle this if we end up pulling the trigger here. So I think they were very, very conscious of these kind of things that you're getting into.
So what would be your play? If you're Boogie here, and I know you wish you were, what would be your mindset coming into this week knowing that you're about to gain this power?
So this would have been the thing for me, and this is to go back to the very initial question of this round. I really don't think I would have been wanting this HOH, because I still feel like, rightly or wrongly, I would have been viewing that coup d'etat as a free roll that I did not want to jeopardize. And worst case scenario is the week doesn't play out the way we want it to, and just Thursday night I can force people to do what I want anyway. Whereas I don't know if the more we talk through him winning this HOH, and the more we see of the incredible work Chilltown, frankly, is able to do over the course of this round, the more okay I am with it. But my first and foremost plan would have been, don't win HOH. Once I do win HOH, as I mentioned, I think for sure I'm putting up Janelle and James. And I agree with, over the course of this veto episode, all of the logic that Chilltown lays out for why Janelle must stay. So I would, I think at the end of the day, be probably shockingly dumb, doing exactly what my hero Mike Boogie does here, and just play. I think this is totally a great high level round of Big Brother here. Mm-hmm. All right. Would you be going for Danielle, or do you feel like James is more worth it?
I feel like if I could press a button and have any one player leave the house, it would be Danielle instead. But I don't know how you actually make that work without tipping off James in the process. So yeah, I think the way they did it makes a lot of sense.
Okay. I guess one consideration along those lines is, I mean, it's the same, frankly, between Danielle and Janelle, too. But I guess if you leave in James instead of Danielle, he's probably slightly less likely to work with Janelle. But maybe they're more likely just because they have worked with each other in the past and they would know that they were totally up against it. I don't know.
This is the old question of, people take it worse when they're betrayed by a friend than by someone they have no expectations for. And it's so hard for James to go back to Janelle, given all of their history, than it is for Danielle to do exactly what he did and offer a truce to Janelle, which I think they both realized was just Danielle going through the motions. But that could actually amount to something if Danielle gained power the next week and was able to come after Chilltown. Like, that could actually have been a thing. I guess also you have this debate of, you know that you're going to have to take out Janelle eventually. Is it better to have James there as someone who can compete with her in HOHs, in vetoes, and maybe on a better level than Danielle could? Although Danielle is no slouch this season in the comps, by the way.
No, Danielle's never been a slouch in the competitions or at any aspect of Big Brother, frankly. But that is a good point. Is someone eventually is going to have to not only beat Janelle once, but likely have to beat her twice. Unless she's the outgoing HOH or whatever. That is a question that it took him a long, long time to answer. It wasn't until the final HOH that someone was ultimately able to keep Janelle out of power for an entire round. She was one competition away from making people really regret that decision potentially. So maybe that is a better point than, we're just being results oriented to not weigh that more considerably.
Yeah. And I guess if you keep James in to compete with Janelle and then you succeed in getting Janelle out, well, now you have James there who can just go on a run and maybe win his way to the end, which I guess isn't as bad necessarily, but it's still an issue you have to deal with at some point.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Although I would say Janelle is a bigger front runner than James to win her way to the end. So Dom, what was historical about this veto competition? It was the first ever OTEV veto competition, as Chicken George, who was hosting the competition, kept calling him OTEV. He kept saying it OTEV instead of OTEV. And of course, we all know how this works. It's basically musical chairs where everyone runs out to find some item that they're going to sacrifice to OTEV. And whoever the last one back is going to be eliminated. And it comes down, as I said, this is an extraordinarily high stakes veto. Certainly the biggest veto of the summer to this point, and maybe the biggest of the season, although that final five veto as well, where Will barely manages to not unclip and potentially cost himself the game, all consideration there.
Yeah, don't remind me about that ahead of time, because it's just too traumatic to think about.
Yeah, well, the stakes are high here, Dom, and we will see for both Janelle and James. They're down to like the final three people, and obviously they both think their lives are on the line with this competition, and they're both going for the same Marcellus doll. The answer to the clue is Marcellus. They get into what James will describe as like an assault situation where he gets a cut on his finger. They start like tussling, I guess, over this Marcellus doll. Janelle ends up boxing James out and getting it. James isn't thrilled, but he's out of the competition, and Janelle is going to win this crucial veto.
James thinks the show is fixed in Janelle's favor. Well, it is. I'm the one fixing it, James.
And yeah, James is harmed, the poor thing, and it's been over a decade now. I hope there's been no permanent injury there. I hope his hand is fully functional, that, you know, everything there is working properly.
He's so funny. There's a confessional where he's like, look, this is harm. It's slight harm, but it's harm.
just like sticking his like distended hand towards the camera as if anyone is going to be convinced or care or have any sympathy at all.
Yeah. And there was actually, I also want to give some credit to Boogie here. In a pivotal round, they were all looking for a Jace doll, and he was nearby Janelle. He found the Jace doll, and he flipped it face up and threw it near her so she could get it and run and get onto the platform, because obviously her winning is much better than him winning for Chilltown. So some good stuff there, some good technique there, I guess. So Janelle is our big veto winner. She's going to come off the block. We need a replacement nominee here, although it seems pretty clear James' time is going to be coming to an end. George and Erica are the only real choices here besides Will to be the replacement nominee. George ends up going up next to James, and it is time for the Legion of Doom to sadly come to an end. One of my all-time favorite reality TV alliances. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. Do you feel that James is a fourth wheel there, or does he actually contribute to your enjoyment of it?
I think he definitely does contribute to my to my enjoyment of it. I was someone who in BB6 was a big time James fan, and as I was watching BB7, was definitely rooting for James. I think he's one of the frankly all time great Big Brother kind of agents of chaos, really just a guy looking to go in there and play the game hard. And I really love to see that. And while I don't think James is ever going to, or like would ever have been in that kind of caliber of, you know, like a Will or Ann or whoever else you want to put in there, I do think he was a very solid player. Like, we saw him execute some really high level things. And I think James always, to me at least, demonstrated a lot of respect for the game, which for whatever stupid reason I always like to see. And I did think it was cool to hear him say in his exit interview, even moments after being blindsided by Chilltown, he said, you know, it was frankly like an honor to be in an alliance with Chilltown and Danielle Reyes. And I think that is cool. I think he almost viewed himself more as a fourth wheel than I do.
Yeah, James is never a sympathetic character, right? But I think he adds something interesting to both the season and to whatever alliance he's a part of, mostly because he's trying to turn on it at any given time.
Yeah, James is a lot of fun for sure in both of his seasons. So I guess we can quickly get into Chilltown once again goes for like the epic blindside here of not only James, but of Danielle Reyes as well. What did you make of the decision to do that? Or do you feel like there was any merit in being forthright and saying, hey, Danielle, look, he's getting too greedy. He's got to go. Or do you feel like they had no choice or somewhere in the middle?
I almost like the way that Chilltown went about it, of painting it as Will going rogue and essentially say, and Boogie trying to clean up the damage afterwards by saying, look, you know that Will felt sketched out by James and I tried to talk him out of it, but I couldn't. I don't know if Danielle believes that, and I think even if she does, she's probably coming after Boogie anyway, just because he is better in the challenges. Although maybe not. Like she, you see her saying, like, Will's ass is mine, and I wonder if she had been HOH that round, or if she had been able to get in Erica's ear, just what would have happened there.
I suspect Danielle would strongly consider wanting Will's head on her mantle more than anything at that point. Is I'm not going to get tricked by this guy again.
Yeah, even if it's maybe not the right move in the abstract, there is something so unique about Will and so hurtful about being double-crossed by him specifically that, yeah, I completely understand why she would let herself want to go after Will there.
I have a hard time coming up with a scenario where it is not the right decision to evict Will Kirby. It's always fine to evict Will Kirby. You're never making that big of a mistake by getting Will out of the game.
I almost wonder if, despite Boogie being in a show match with Erica, if Will is actually, if he actually has more influence over her than Boogie did.
If Will, over Erica, do you mean on a personal basis, or because he can manipulate Boogie, he thus has...
By some transitive thing? No, thinking directly. Like, he, in terms of how convincing they are individually, like, Boogie is convincing enough, and he certainly gets her to do what he needs her to do, but Will is just so unrivaled in terms of mind-fucking people, getting inside their heads, and somehow engineering stuff that should just not even be possible.
Yeah, and it is really interesting to kind of juxtapose that and just how incredible he is at convincing people to do what he wants within the game with just the character scenes that we see of Will. Are 9 times out of 10, Will's being an asshole to someone. Yeah. Like, Will's getting in fights with people about such petty things and, like, really putting him on blast in public settings. It's hard to fathom how he's such a socially renowned player and so good at getting people to forgive him. And I really do think it comes down to the one that, I mean, we brought this up in another previous episode, where he has that famous confessional about, like, the only thing stronger than pressure in this house is charisma. And that's all it is with Will. Like, he is so damn charming. I think that's all it is with Will.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we move on from James, though, I've been promising this for the past few... I'm not going to say past few weeks, because in real time it's been 4 months now. But the past few episodes of this that we've done, of this gradually growing montage of people just absolutely despising Janelle. And this really came to a head with James, who was the standard bearer for it. And so with his eviction, I think it makes sense to focus on this now quickly.
Let me just say this. I want to walk up to Busted Blonde Bombshell and pull that brassy blonde hair out by its black roots. Then I want to rip out her black heart and shove it down Will's cold, stupid throat.
I've never seen anything like it before in my life. And I love women. It's disgusting.
Janelle has been after me since day one. Day one, I have been walking on eggshells around that fat bitch.
Janelle looks like he would buy her in a transvestite sex toy shop.
These are words out of your mouth about her this season. You called her dumb, a stupid bitch, whore, and an Anna Nicole Smith wannabe.
Of course, she's not the same girl she was last year. She's like a fat piece of this year.
You have called her fat, busto, a lying fat ass, and even a bitch. And this is a direct quote from you.
America might like Janelle. I hate her. I'm probably going to pull her out by her fake hair and her fake boobs and drown her in the pool. No, she's really not that bad, I promise. It's just the stress and just being caught up in the moment and the gameplay. It's embarrassing to hear that I said something like that, so I apologize for that completely.
And just to add one other thing on to the end of that, one of my all-time favorite diary rooms is Will and Janelle doing a, like, flirty diary room together, and they're both sitting in the chair, and Will says to Janelle, "Janelle, on a scale of 1 to 2, you're a solid 1. And she, like, punches him in the arm. It's such good stuff.
Yeah, well, as you've just heard, most people in the house are not playfully negging Janelle. They actually just outright despise her. And I think it's worth discussing briefly why you think that is, because Janelle, more so than I think any other contestant in the history of the show, just engenders this disgust and disdain from the people that she's playing against. And sometimes that comes with this grudging respect of, I hate her, but she's pretty damn good in competitions or stuff like that. But, like, I think people take it for granted that because the fans loved Janelle so much, therefore, like, she was a big jury threat or she was really loved on her seasons. But when you dig down into it, it's like, no, she is a very controversial figure. And I wonder if you have any takes on just why that might be.
I think she's, first of all, not alone in the same way I referenced before. I think she's just the kind of prototype for the Donatos or the Rachel Rileys of the Big Brother universe, or like Cody and Jessica. And I think all parties involved there largely bring it on themselves. Like, they are the ones drawing the line in the sand saying, you're either with me or you're against me. And they're the ones that are making everything so personal, I feel like. And I think Janelle, while she did, capture the hearts of America, or at least half of America, at least, you know, a solid percentage of America in the process, I really do think, I understand why people in the house with her would not be the biggest Janelle fans. Like, it really seems like she doesn't even make an effort to try with the people that she doesn't think are on her side.
Yeah.
She lets you know. Like, she's like, hey, yeah. Listen, I want nothing to do with you.
It is fascinating, I think, to break it down by gender, I guess, or role in the game, because you have all of these different female players who hate Janelle, like Amy, who isn't even on the same season as Janelle, but finds the time to get this dig in anyway. You have Amy, you have Diane, Allison, and like Erica hates Janelle at times. And then you have Marcellus, who is Janelle's friend, and he loves women, of course. Don't forget that. Marcellus loves women, but he happens to just viscerally hate Janelle. And then also you have James, who is like this wannabe bro, kind of. But then also Janelle's closest friend throughout both her seasons is Harry, who is the biggest wannabe bro there is, who is like this caricature of himself. So it's really weird to see just how like that breaks down along demographic lines as well.
Yeah, well, do you have any theories about what it is about Janelle other than that she's a female that Marcellus really is into, that makes her so divisive within the Big Brother house? Like, is there something about the way she is approaching the game, or is it just her personality is such that for whatever reason she seems to just, you know, have people feeling strongly about her one way or the other in no time?
And then also, like, one example I forgot was you had Beau, who in BB6, mm-hmm. like, they just hated each other. They had that infamous argument, but now they're the best of friends, apparently. So yeah, it's, and obviously all of the women in the friendship hated Janelle. So it's weird to think about. But outside of
Dom, next time we get in a fight, I'm gonna call you a polyester hair bitch, just FYI.
I look forward to it. But outside of Dr. Will's renowned and verified theory that blondes hate other blondes, I'm not sure what's actually behind that. So if anyone out there has any thoughts, be interested to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, I really do feel like it's Janelle. I don't think it's the world unfairly being, putting Janelle in such a polarizing position. I think Janelle and all of the Big Brother figures over the years that have kind of fit into this mold are largely bringing it upon themselves. And it's certainly worked to great extents for all of them, I would say, to one degree or another. What do the Donatos, Brendan and Rachel, Cody and Jessica and Janelle have in terms of combined CBS reality seasons? Like double digits? It's very close. So I think there's something to it in terms of getting the audience on your side, but it remains questionable, at least in my mind, why anyone, frankly, is considering Janelle one of the all-time great Big Brother players, when that is just the overwhelming sense that the entire house gets every single time she's in it. Let's any final thoughts on James before we head send him out, before James gets to step in, I guess?
No, I think we're good with James.
Okay, yeah, James certainly doing just fine for himself post Big Brother, from what I have heard. So,
ironically or not?
Ironically, in one department, not so much in another department.
Okay.
So, okay. I guess we can't not talk about Marcellus and Howie are the first two jurors. They are an all-time elite jury house odd couple, as far as I'm concerned, where Marcellus gets the segment talking about what a great week it's been by himself, just on the beach, reading books, drinking wine, what could be better. And then it cuts to him talking through like all the possibilities, and it cuts to, oh my God, I'm just going to kill myself if Howie comes in next. And then it's, what's up, Marcy?
Yeah, I know it's been said of recent Big Brother seasons that you would much rather have live feeds of the jury house than the actual Big Brother house. That this season is good enough that that's not true, but I would gladly pay some kind of subscription service for live feeds of Marcellus and Harry during that 1 week.
Yeah, well, the next jury segment's even better when Chicken George gets there. It may not even be the next one, maybe two from now, when there's a huge fight between, I don't even remember who it's between it. It's like Marcellus and Howie, and Chicken George is like somehow the most responsible person in the room.
Yeah, and Chicken George and Howie, and then everyone else and Howie, Common Decency and Howie. Yeah, it's the thing is as well, like Howie comes across so badly. He really is obnoxious, but Marcellus, and like, you know that Marcellus is in the right, but he's still not sympathetic. You still kind of enjoy Harry torturing him.
It is funny, like, I swear that's like the best part of Marcellus and Howie, close to the best part all season. Like Howie's exit, I would say, is the best part of Howie all season. But Howie in the jury house is very high on the list. And likewise for Marcellus. They didn't get a ton of great like character scenes this time after both being pretty big presences on their first seasons. But this was, as you're right, I would kill for some live feeds of this. Although I am nervous that it was just Marcellus not wanting Howie within 100 yards of him under any circumstance. Which is understandable. So, Dom, there goes James. Let's move on to the next HOH competition. It's a before and after competition. And when watching this back, it's still just funny to me to see Will up there competing, just like pretending that he's putting in an effort in any of these competitions. It's always funny to the juxtaposition between someone walks out the door as Chilltown like escorts them and pats them on the back and says good game, and then they just go and throw the next HOH competition and repeat every single week. It's really a remarkable sight to behold.
Yeah, at some point Boogie says something like, "Will, two in a row, dog," as if anyone is going to believe. Like, I don't even know who he's trying to convince at that point. Like, the viewers know what's up, the other players know what's up. It's just an open secret, basically. So yeah, it's right. Just I don't even know what the point is.
Between HOH and Vito, Will goes something like a combined 0-for-40 in competitions in his career. It's unbelievable.
And and I'm sure we'll get into it when we get there, but it is so perfect that the one competition he actually tries to win, he doesn't, and that's what ends the game for him, effectively.
Yeah. Well, Erica is going to win this before and after competition. An interesting HOH for sure, to have someone outside of Janelle be safe or outside of Chilltown theoretically calling the shots. I'm sure Danielle Reyes was feeling really good about this. I'm sure she was thinking, if I can't win, Erica is easily the next best option. We will see how all of that goes as we talk about the round of six as well as the round of five in our next part, time TBD. But it is dumb. I think we can announce. I think it's fine to announce. Looking good on having a special guest join us for that episode. He is confirmed. I'm excited. So whenever we do this, which I'm hoping will be shortly after Christmas, we're going to be joined for that by Paul Osselson from the Survivor Historians, getting some more old school CBS reality in the mix. So looking very much forward to that. Dom, anything else you want to get to before we get out of here?
No, only to say that it's good to be back in the swing of things with this. Hopefully as the Survivor season is wrapping up and we enter the off season, we can wrap this up too and then have a clean slate for whatever comes next.
Yeah. So until next time, Dom is of course on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. Email us, domandcolin@gmail.com. We will talk to you, I'm sure, very soon. Thanks for listening. Get to stepping, everybody.